I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
I'm Jay. I'm editor of The Eagles Beak, a Palace fan site by fans for fans. You can get us across all our social media channels at The Eagles Beak, and obviously on our website, theeaglesbeak.com, which just hit 8 years. I'm also a producer and co-host of the Music and Sport Social, we've just renamed it actually, a community radio show covering sport and music online. You can get us on all our social media channels at The Meridian SS.
Hi, I'm Steve McGuckin. I'm a Spurs fan based in Belfast. And previously, I was the chairman of the New York Spurs Supporters Club. You can get me online at Steve McGuckin or join the conversation at NY Spurs. And happy anniversary on the site, Jay.
Cheers, Steve.
Yeah, congratulations there, Jay. I briefly appeared on that website, which helped rejuvenate my whole writing career, which has proven to work out. So definitely thank you for that and for all the fun times that Eagles Beak has provided both fans and non-fans. We are here with good news that isn't just the Eagles Beak related, though. It's that the Premier League is going to return. June 17th is the return date. There's going to be a little mini match week there for the games in hand that were still out remaining before the full action returns that weekend, which I assume would be the 20th, if that math checks out. But anyway, just delighted that the Premier League is back. Obviously, questions about the health aspects, but we'll get that to a second. But yeah, guys, just take us back in time a little bit to the moment when you found out that the Premier League would indeed be picking up and so soon.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I've been quite dubious about sport returning for obvious reasons. You know, the UK are suffering quite badly on the coronavirus front when compared to other countries. And we've seen all the good work that Germany have done getting the Bundesliga back. And a lot of us have looked on quite, you know, with jealous eyes, really, just in terms of how well they've brought it back. And obviously Germany as a country dealt with the pandemic probably as efficiently as they possibly could, which is what you'd expect from Germany. It's really good to be able to focus on the Premier League coming fans, but I think there's a bigger picture because there's obviously a lot of conversation around, you know, players, whether they want to play or not, and that's going to rumble on for a little while yet. But as things stand, we're waiting for the for some of the fixtures to come out in terms of how they're going to run for the first weekend. At least we know that there's a couple of games in that midweek on the 17th for the teams that are playing catch up. But it's good to look ahead and have some focus on having the Premier League back. I think there's an argument as to whether it should be coming back. I understand the reasons why, the financial reasons why, and your Premier League is big business in this country, as football is in a lot of countries. It generates a lot of money, but from a purely a fan perspective, yes, there's not going to be fans in a stadium, which will have an effect. It's not the same. It's not the same beast, is it? We've watched Bundesliga, and personally, I've enjoyed watching Bundesliga other than probably the first weekend. I think it's almost got to the point where you've got used to the fans not being there. I don't know if you guys have felt the same. It just feels like, you know, it's almost part of the new norm. Whether that will come into play when you have an allegiance. You know, a true allegiance, like the Premier League coming back and watching Palace and that kind of thing. Because, you know, Palace are a side is well known to have a vociferous crowd behind them at Selhurst, and that really, really does help, you know, push the team on a little bit. So that'd be very different. But yeah, purely forward to seeing how things work. how what the Premier League have learned from watching Germany, because obviously the Bundesliga have a number of weeks ahead of the Premier League to get back. So hopefully they'll have learned a few lessons from what the Bundesliga have done and pick up on some of those. So I'm anxious about it, you know, but from a footballing perspective, I'm looking forward to seeing some football back in this country for sure.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that, Jay. I think there is a combination, isn't there, of relief and trepidation. The idea that, you know, if something were to go wrong, that could just put pay to next season as well as what's left of this one. The last podcast I was on with you, Kev, we had Doc Joshi on, and we were actually talking about the possibility of losing part of next season as well as this season, if that had been like the worst case scenario. I was over in London for the Spurs Man U game the weekend of March the 15th, which was the sort of final close down. That was the first weekend that the games was postponed. And at that stage, I sort of thought, we're not going to get this back. We're not going to be able to do this safely. But then I think once we got our heads around the notion of there being no fans, playing in front of no fans, I think the equation possibly changed a little bit, and it became more manageable. It became more imaginable, the idea that we could do that. I mean, the testing, I think, like society as a whole, the testing is going to be central to how we address this going forward, and the idea that we have just this one positive test this week out of about 1,200, I think, seems very encouraging. And of course, as you said, Kevin, it would be a Spurs player. That seems very encouraging, given that the first phase of testing just a few weeks ago had six positives, I think, out of a much smaller pool of tests. And so I think the original plan was to ramp up to like 2,000 tests a week, covering all the clubs. So hopefully, you know, we'll be able to monitor that trend and keep that sort of low number going, and it'll be encouraging up to and after June the 17th. So I'm kind of relieved to have some semblance of normality in football back, but it obviously won't be as it was, and we'll have to just deal with that. I mean, the representatives of the clubs are meeting tomorrow, but you know, 2 weeks from today, we're going to have that Man City Arsenal game, which was the first midweek game that was suspended. So, but obviously, there are things for them to discuss tomorrow, and they'll have one more meeting before the 17th. I understand things like, you know, what do they do about relegation if the season doesn't end? The number of substitutions. There's even, you know, the talk about doing away with VAR for the rest of the season. The Premier League obviously doesn't want to do that. It wants to keep the integrity of, the games that were played under other circumstances. But I saw today that the Premier League teams have been given permission to play friendlies in the run-up to the restart, which is kind of interesting. Obviously, there's a string of conditions that go along with that. Obviously, they're not allowed to travel more than 90 minutes from their home ground. And they won't be able to use referees because the testing regime for the referees hasn't been finalized yet. There's so many unknowns at the moment as we go into this, but I'm glad we're going into it, if you know what I mean, even though the risks may be controllable. As far as the actual football is concerned, I don't expect to go back to the same quality. And Jamie had the point about the Bundesliga. You're not going to expect to go back to the same quality of performance that you would have got had the season continued, obviously. And then fitness for the players after such a long layoff is going to be an issue. Obviously, given the higher temperatures in the summer months as well, that could be a factor. But I suppose the Euros were just about to start up around about now, so that idea of extending the season would have been in a lot of players' minds in any case. So yeah, I mean, another thing that we're going to have to watch out for, it's going to be interesting. Once we start up again, how many actual people have to be involved inside the stadium? Because I'm not sure they've sort of worked that out in terms of the logistical detail of how those people get in, how they get out, how they interact while they're in the stadium, whether that's, you know, staff, police, TV crew, that sort of thing. See that Gareth Southgate said that he wouldn't be going to evaluate players at games behind closed doors, but which makes perfect sense. I mean, it avoids adding an extra sort of layer of bureaucracy and safety precautions for him and whoever brings with him. So, you know, let's get moving and let's see how it goes, and let's hope that the Premier League has you know, with those considerations of obviously you have to weigh up the business aspect with the health aspect, but fingers crossed.
Yeah, you obviously brought up a lot of points there. At least a little bit excited, though.
Oh, excited, absolutely. But okay. Still, you know, at the back of your mind, you know, it's not sort of real football in a strange way because of the fact that there's no fans. But in a way, you know that that's the only practical way you're going to be able to do something like this. So, yeah, excited to see it, absolutely. But, you know, there's still part of me that's a little trepidatious.
I'm with you, Steve, on that. I very much am, because obviously today the UK reported over 300 deaths today, and that's still a lot of. I'm not wanting to be negative on the subject in the slightest, but you know, we are a country or a group of countries here, the UK, that have suffered one of the countries that have suffered the most during this pandemic, which is. Been absolutely atrocious, and you know, the right decisions have been made from a sporting perspective all the way along. The trepidation that Steve mentions there is probably overriding my feeling of excitement at the moment, because you know, we're still reporting you know, a large number of deaths on a daily basis, and the infection rate isn't going down quite as much, and it's too much detail on that, because we're not a pandemic podcast, we're a Premier League podcast. That is a nagging doubt in the back of my head a little bit, just in terms of it has to be right, and the right things have to be done. And if a decision has to be made to the effect that the Premier League starts even and it can't continue, then, you know, that's got to be done. Safety's got to be at the forefront, which I know is what's trying to be done, and why probably the Premier League are behind the likes of the Bundesliga and potentially other leagues as well. So I have that overriding feeling of you know, kind of above the excitement part just at the moment. But I'm pretty sure once we get going and we see things are working comfortably, then I think things might be a bit different. But I'm just in that corner at the moment, because I still think it's a little bit early, just in terms of timing and things are happening in the UK at the moment, just in terms of how the pandemic is still not under control, I would say. And you know, we look at Germany with, like I mentioned, jealous eyes, because they have dealt with the pandemic, probably one of the countries that dealt with it in the best way possible. You know, obviously this is something that's come along, which, you know, you know people talk about German efficiency and organisation. They've certainly done the best they can, and they brought the Bundesliga back safely, and you know, for fans to be able to enjoy. But we've watched it for the last few weeks, and you know, we can watch. But the overriding feeling is that Germany didn't suffer as much as the UK haven't, just in terms of the effect of the pandemic. So I'm a little bit cautious, more than excited at the moment, unfortunately.
You also, I think you're absolutely right, Jay, but I think also you didn't really get a sense from the German public that there was a clamour to return to normality or
something. Right.
Sense of normality, you know what I mean, that they were content to trust their government to say, well, right, we've got to this point where this is actually possible, rather than sort of the public pushing that perception from this side.
Yeah, well, as you guys mentioned, the health aspect is certainly a very important one. Fortunately for the Premier League, as Steve mentioned earlier, there have been very few returned positive tests. The last round of testing yielded zero positive results, than the ones that were reported today yielded one, which, as Steve mentioned, is either a Tottenham staff member or player. No confirmation of the identity, and we're told not to expect one. But while this pandemic does continue to rage on in the populace, it seems like that rate is incredibly low within the Premier League. Do you guys think that there will continue to be this kind of low-level testing and that we'll actually be able to get through football once it restarts?
I think the results so far have been very positive, you know, more so than when you look at a championship. The championship had quite a few more positive tests in there. I think they had the first round of testing or they're on second, I'm not sure. But I think I read earlier today there's been 9 positive tests in the championship. So the Premier League have got away lightly on that. And hopefully that's a sign of things to come. You know, it's really positive to have that first initial positive step on the route back to getting Premier League football back in some sort of capacity. Obviously, you mentioned, Kev, Steve mentioned, and everyone's of the same opinion that safety has to be at the forefront and the right things have to be done so we can learn from what's happened in Germany in terms of getting a Bundesliga back. I hate to keep mentioning Bundesliga, but it's just something that, you know, we've got something to look at and we can see exactly how they've done it and try and replicate that kind of thing here, which, you know, just seems the most sensible thing to do, because, you know, we should probably be following something that's proved to be successful so far. But from a testing perspective, it's been really good news from that front, and that's probably the best thing that could have happened. I think if there'd have been a glut of positive tests in the first and second rounds, then it would have likely put a lot of players off. I know there's quite a few players out there in the Premier League that have a few doubts. And there's some probably sitting on the fence a little bit just in terms of whether a football should be coming back. But this will give them confidence, and this will give everybody involved in the game confidence. Actually, the Premier League can come back in a safe manner. So hopefully those tests will continue along similar vein.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think as each week goes on and we sort of learn from the experience of Germany, as you say, and any ways that we can isolate people who do test positive and followed up with the proper care and testing. I think that it is encouraging. And as you say, it sends a good message to the players who may have been otherwise going back and forth on whether or not this was going to work. So, yeah, I mean, just when we say I'm kind of positive about it, you have to think about, well, I'm encouraged by it. I'm not positive about it. And, it's the old use of the language. I remember once when sorry to digress just for a second, when Danny Blanchflower was commentating the North American Soccer League in the U.S. and he was just way too critical. He would just say that the players weren't very good and. And the CBS producer or whoever the network producer was came into the booth at halftime and he said, Danny, he said, you can't say that. He said, can you be more positive? And Danny said, well, I'm positive. They're not very good.
Oh, that's brilliant. I think going back to the point you made there, Steve, is that, this is something very new to everybody. And, you know, it's little steps at a time, isn't it? And I think if we can grab minimal positive tests in the early stages, then that's something that we can cling on to initially and take more steps forward at a little bit of a quicker pace maybe. But I sense a real, a real sensitive way of going about things by the Premier League. We've not had an awful lot in terms of publicity from the Premier League directly themselves in view of what they're planning as such. It's all kind of come through the media and the journalists rather than directly from the Premier League. So they've been pretty quiet on the subject. But it's news. So I think that's good news to start with. And then we'll take a few more steps forward and see what the next bit brings. So, yeah, it's all very new to everybody, isn't it? So it's one of those, isn't it? We don't actually know what's around the corner. So, yeah, it's encouraging.
Yeah. Well, as Steve also mentioned earlier, the good news from all of this is that we're on the football calendar now, which will include these coming friendlies that Premier League clubs will be allowed to play no further than 90 minutes away from their own grounds, have to travel in their own cars. And again, as Steve mentioned, coaching staffs will do the refereeing so that they don't have to bring in actual referees to do it. Although I feel like I saw a statement from some referee that they wanted to be involved. But as things currently stand, those are the rules. Do you guys think that this will help get players back up to fitness? Because we have seen with the Bundesliga, which obviously just restarted without friendlies, there have been some soft tissue injuries, which you'd kind of expect with players not having been able to play for the last couple of months.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Interesting one, isn't it? Because, you know, the break that we've had is probably more so than players would have ever had in their career so far. The summer isn't very long anymore for footballers, you know, for the profession at all, particularly if your season is extended for reaching finals or playoffs and that kind of thing. So, you know, that summer kind of, you know, gets reduced quite a lot, particularly when you're looking ahead to international tournaments like the Euros are supposed to have been, you know, this summer as well. So this is an extended period of time. And again, it's a little bit of an unknown, isn't it? Because, you know, we don't know exactly levels of fitness that these players have been keeping up with at home, but the reports are good. I think Sheffield United have reported some really good results from their players, which is good to hear. And I'm pretty convinced that a lot of other players will have been the same. But we all know that match fitness is completely different to keeping fit on your own and, you know, doing the running and that kind of fitness. Actually playing football and that kind of thing is very different. And playing a game is, again, different to training with a ball on a pitch. So that's going to be interesting. And the Bundesliga, I know, have had a really large number of muscle injuries during this first few weeks of football being back. So, again, I think it's going to be play it by ear a little bit, you know, for the first couple of weeks. And certainly these friendlies will help because match fitness is probably the biggest thing, which if they can have some friendlies, whatever kind of level that is, that will help. But it's going to be nothing like actually playing a full-on Premier League game against a Premier League opposition. You can't replicate that in any kind of situation, really, I don't think, particularly at the top level. So, it's going to be a very difficult situation because we don't actually know. You know, it's an enforced layoff for a longer length of time than a lot of these players have ever experienced. So on a purely, you know, if you take put the pandemic to one side, it's probably a welcome rest for a lot of these players, particularly those who have been carrying niggling injuries. You know, a lot of the players will probably become back fitter than they went, you know, than they finished. Well, from when the Premier League ended or was suspended, even, I should say. So, yeah, certainly friendlies will help, but it's not going to be at the same level. I remember playing friendly games and I never understood the word friendly, because when you're playing a game of football, it's a game of football. And as playing as a defender, you know, used to get a manager saying, "Oh, just 70-80%, because it's a friendly, it's pre-season friendly. Don't want to get injured for the season." But I've never understood the word friendly. I've just played, and I know there's players out there, certainly in the Premier League, that will probably be the same. Actually, I need to play proper match of football and just kind of test my body a little bit. So that's going to be interesting in itself.
Yeah, I know. Right. Really, the only real friendlies are training games within your own squad, when you think about it. I think the challenge for the players was when the season was suspended, they didn't know how long it was going to be for. Mm. So, in a way, when you're organizing your training regime, I would guess that, you know, it was harder for them to actually try and envisage coming back to a competitive game at some point. I think the friendlies will help, if only from a very basic standpoint of letting the players work out things like how to tackle. I mean, how much physical contact they're going to feel comfortable with, and that sort of thing, and just getting back into the whole muscle memory of what you do when you're playing and how closely you mark someone and just things like that. So that just the physical manifestation of just being on a pitch with 21 other players is actually going to be very important. So does anybody know how many friendlies the clubs think that they're going to be able to squeeze in before the 17th?
Logistically, it can't be more than two, right?
Right.
I've not seen anything definitive out there. I know there's clubs out there that have suggested the want to have friendlies. I'm not sure whether every Premier League team will do it. It's going to be interesting in itself to see, which ones step forward and
relearning a whole sort of way in which to, play under these new circumstances. Mm. But and clearly, some players might adjust to it better than others.
Mm. Yeah, it'll certainly be interesting to see how that all of that goes. And if one club chooses to try to squeeze in three and another club only does one, is it more of a benefit to the team that's then fresher? Or more of a benefit to the team that has more air quotes game minutes under their legs? Yeah, these will all certainly be narratives that we'll have to track through the remainder of the season. There has been conversation ever since talk of restarting the season came back about the idea of neutral venues. The Premier League obviously proposed a full neutral venue plan, and it failed so terribly that we never heard anything about that proposal ever again. But there are still requests based on, it sounds like it was a poll of regional police departments, that might be an Americanism, of how they should handle certain key matches, like the North London Derby, like the X match, which is in the report, which is meant to represent any match in which Liverpool could win the title. Right. Other key clashes like that. I know Newcastle were on there because of all of the Mike Ashley stuff and that fans might want to protest around the stadium. But do you guys think that it's weird to get rid of the whole neutral venue plan but then still have some matches happen with it?
This annoyed me a little bit, actually, Kev, just reading between the lines. And obviously the Premier League, the FA are talking to the appropriate police authorities in different areas and identifying potential games where there could be problems with fans gathering and that kind of thing. I'm not going to go off topic too much here, but before fans are given the opportunity to actually see their sport come back and be played, they're trying to make decisions on those fans misbehaving and doing what they shouldn't be doing. Whereas we've just had a number of instances in the UK where beaches have been packed with people. There's protests in London today where nobody's social distancing. The people on the beach are not social distancing. And that's not being dealt with at the same kind of level, and it's the same thing about football fans being treated in a certain way before anything happens. I know there's been previous, but surely let's get football back. And I kind of understand it in a certain respect, because there's certain situations where, potentially the Merseyside Derby, it's the same game, there could be fans gathering outside, but I don't think football fans in this country are in that kind of zone. I mean, we saw it in the Champions League, didn't we, before the season was suspended, particularly the PSG, the Borussia Dortmund game. There were a lot of PSG fans outside the ground. I think there was a few thousand of them outside the ground for that. And I totally understand the kind of police looking towards that and thinking, we can't have that happen in this country because that sort of thing, which I kind of get. But I don't think that's the way of English football fans. I don't, maybe it would be different if there's a game where Liverpool would win the title. I don't know. Maybe I'm underestimating Liverpool fans here. I don't really know. But I was kind of a little bit, maybe I was being sensitive about it, because, I kind of felt a little bit insulting that they're thinking about that kind of eventuality. And I know they have to try and think of all the eventualities, but you kind of get what I mean, thinking that there might be trouble by football fans when actually, things are happening within the UK at the moment where, the same rule isn't being applied, that kind of thing. But yeah, I kind of get it. But the Bundesliga aren't playing at neutral grounds, so no reason why we should be using neutral grounds, really.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with pretty much all of that, Jay. I think that this whole concept of the integrity of the game, which you hear being sort of trotted out every so often, the essence of that is that the constraints are the same on every team as far as possible in order to keep that regularity through the season. So, it looks like the Premier League have decided to sort of kick the can down the road a little bit here and not make a firm decision for a while. Yeah. But obviously it's something that involves other agencies than just the league and the clubs. And the league wants to keep the number of neutral ground games at a minimum. But it might end up being the sort of thing where decisions get made very late in the day. Just because, you know, we have no control over events in terms of, you know, is there a regional or a local spike in coronavirus cases or things that we have control over now. So, and also another thing to bear in mind is, you know, what happens when the pubs reopen? How do you regulate how people watch a game in the pub? Because, you know, I know that was a big consideration about the idea of just, well, we'll play all the games behind closed doors and broadcast them. We don't want people, you know, gathering in the pub. And the other thing, of course, is we were talking about the potential games where Liverpool could win the title. And I know it's been sort of bandied around that they could play those games at Wembley. So, I mean, what happens if they lose that game? And so their next game also becomes a game at which they could win the title. Do they go back to Wembley and play there again? I mean, there's just so many sort of unknowns around anything. I think if there's one good thing that we can take out of this whole argument is I think the Merseyside Derby is scheduled for, is it the first weekend that we're back, Kev? I'm pretty sure it's the first weekend back. So in a way, we're going to have to address that issue pretty early. And obviously Everton want to play the game at Goodison. But, you know, I think, as I say, the decision will probably end up being made quite close to the actual game itself. I mean, the functions obviously have to rest with the the local authorities in conjunction with the police and the safety advisors and that sort of thing. And they'll have to do assessment around each game at each time. But, yeah, it's hard to predict, but as I say, this notion of a consistency that everything should be the same for every team, you probably have to suspend that for a while. Mm-hmm.
Do you guys think that Liverpool fans in particular have been harshly targeted by this whole thing, or do you think it's just because they're the team closest to winning the title with the context of how long it's been that they'd expect in particular that fan base to have this reaction? Or yeah, I was just curious because it keeps being drug up that it's Liverpool. It's kind of the air quotes issue.
No, I think it's exactly that, Kevin, exactly what you said. I think it would be the same for if any other team were in that position, you would have the same issue to deal with.
All right, well, then we'll move on from there. We already talked.
But then you have the other consideration of their victory parade. What do you do, you know, after they do win the title? How do you organize a socially distanced victory parade?
Everybody, you know, get in your cars and open a Zoom call.
there's so many considerations that go along with this, but we'll see how it works out.
That's exactly the thing, though, isn't it? There's so many different things to think about here, you know, not just about, you know, let alone getting a game of football back on without a crowd there. Obviously, taking a crowd away takes away the biggest element issue here. But obviously, you know, managing 100 people within a stadium is probably relatively easy. Maybe I'm under-egging it a little bit there, but I'm assuming that is relatively straightforward to kind of manage. But yeah, you just hit a nail on the head there, Steve, because, you know, there's so many different permutations to think about, you know, in the, you know, Liverpool winning the title and the, you know, the victory parade that they would necessarily want to do and that kind of thing. So many things to think about, and you kind of think, what about that? What about this? And it's, I'm just glad I'm not in a government capacity issues, or you know, in a sporting body like the Premier FA trying to get football back. I certainly don't envy anybody in a position that has to make these decisions and talk about this, because we can talk about it on a podcast and just band around ideas and our views, but we're not making decisions. And yeah, I'm just glad I'm not in that in that sort of corner.
Mm. Although I am frankly offended that we haven't been asked yet, but. No, but absolutely fair. Yeah,
I certainly don't envy anybody who has to make a binding decision for two or three weeks from now. No. I think there has to be a built-in flexibility that allows people to deal with the situation as it is at the as close to the game time as possible.
Yeah. Well, we'll shift a little bit from there to talk about something at an actual football club that has nothing to do with COVID at all. Ralph Hasenhüttl, who was widely praised upon his hiring at Southampton, did a really good job keeping them up last season. Then this season didn't start off so well, including a 9-0 loss to Leicester, but turned it all the way around, ended up beating Leicester in the reverse fixture, obviously beat Tottenham and Chelsea as well since then. He's now been rewarded with a new 4-year contract. Was just curious to get your guys' thoughts on him getting that extension, especially considering where they started the season.
I think it's probably just a reward for the work he's done. I mean, nobody envisaged what would happen after such a 9-0 defeat. It could have completely gone in the opposite direction, couldn't it? But they've used it as a positive. They've, you know, nobody wants to lose a game in that manner. But they were completely and utterly thrashed in that game, weren't they? Let's face it. And I'm talking from experience, because my team lost 9-0 a number of years ago up at Anfield, which wasn't a very nice experience. But it actually worked out to be a positive in that season for us. And it's worked out very, very similar for Southampton. And fair play to them, really, because, you know, this day and age, you don't really get those big results in the Premier League. You know, certainly that level, you know, 9 goals by, and it wasn't even, no offence to Leicester, but it wasn't even a top six side. I mean, yes, they're a top six side at the moment, but it's, you know what I mean? It's not one of the big names handing out a thrashing to somebody. I think it's just reward for them to, you know, for them to offer him a new contract. Southampton are a club who try and do things the right way, and they brought in you know, this guy. And if you're not a follower of continental football, then you wouldn't have known anything about him, like a lot of people in this country. But knowing his background in Germany, he was very highly rated as a coach, and he's come in and, you know, got his feet under the table pretty well. And you know, apart from that 9-0. You know, they've gone on well. I mean, obviously they're not safe yet this season. There's still a bit of work to do, but I think it's fair enough. I think it's a good move from Southampton to get a bit of continuity there and to reassure both fans and players, and it's something for them to build on.
Yep, no, I absolutely. I've been kind of impressed with him since he arrived, and 4 years are kind of a long contract by modern standards, I suppose, but the Southampton fans seem to be pleased, and I have saw a lot of them, you know, on social talking about what has impressed them was his mental strength after that 9-0 defeat, the fact that they were able to rebuild and were able to sort of bounce back from a result that certainly would have tested a lesser individual. And also, organizationally, he and his management team seem to have spent the lockdown period very constructively, putting together like a European-style structure for player development right down into the Southampton youth sides. So clearly he's sort of laying the groundwork and planning ahead for the 4 years after this contract extension. So good luck to him. I mean, you know, there's another couple of Premier League managers who might be technically, obviously, less secure, but you know, this is an unusual season, and we might end up with managers being cut a little bit more slack than they would normally expect. And of course, there's the issue of whether Poch will actually end up in charge of Newcastle, but that's, you know, maybe for another discussion.
Yeah, for those wondering, Southampton currently 14th on 34 points, 7 points clear of the mess that is below them. It's absolutely incredible what he's done, and it's weird the amount of talent that has come and left that club, even in this modern era, not even that period where basically every year their best player went to a different club, but it seemed like they couldn't get the best out of Buffal for a while. They couldn't get the best out of Tadic. They didn't really have a striker. And it seems like they've landed on some of that. Obviously, Tadic doing well at Ajax, but Buffal's back. I'm pretty sure he scored against Tottenham in one of the cups this season. Seems like they've landed on Ings as their man up front, even though he does get injured from time to time. They've decent enough players behind him to deputize. But yeah, it really seems like they're kind of hitting an upward momentum. Time will tell with the summer if that's able to continue. But they're still a pretty young side. So if they can figure it out under Hasenhüttl, who has a very clear vision. Jay, I know you mentioned his coaching credentials. We used to have Sam Cox on the show. And that's what we talked about, is they finally got the manager. The squad and the manager were a problem. Then they got the manager. Now you just have to worry about the players behind him. And they do have talent. So it'll really be interesting to see if, you know, he's there for all 4 years. Because as you mentioned, Steve, it's a pretty long contract, especially in this modern era. But yeah, if he's there all 4 years, I'm pretty sure that in that fourth year, Southampton won't be battling down and around the relegation fight at that point. But time will obviously tell on that. We will finish with a much more somber note. Obviously, the coronavirus, not the only thing happening in the world right now. After the death of George Floyd, there were a number of protests in Germany by players in the Bundesliga fixtures this past weekend. The German footballing organization. Wow, we have a podcast called Bundesliga for Beginners, and that's why, because I don't even know the name of that group. But they confirmed that they aren't going to be punishing any of those players. FIFA going out of their way to mention that league should consider the context before punishing any players that do this. So it sounds like the FA will go along with that as well. But just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on that role that footballing bodies have of not punishing significant protests like the ones that we're seeing and are sure to continue seeing.
It's interesting in Germany, actually, and their organisation deciding not to punish Jadon Sancho particularly. I was out in Germany just before lockdown. Luckily, I would say, because it was my first trip to the Westfalen Stadion to see Borussia Dortmund, which was an amazing experience, I have to say. My first and won't be my last experience of German football and the whole fan culture. And interestingly, I'm not going off on a tangent here, because that weekend Borussia Dortmund played Freiburg, and it was a weekend of quite a lot of protests in German football. I don't know if you guys remember it happening. Happened at the Bayern Munich game against Hoffenheim, and it also happened at the Borussia Dortmund game. I didn't know any German at the time, so I didn't really know what was going on, and the game was halted for like 6 minutes. There was a lot of angst in the yellow wall, but digress a little bit. There were no particular sanctions, but this is an organisation that, they're a modern organisation, I would say, because as we know, the Bundesliga is very fan orientated, the ownership and that kind of thing. And you should probably listen to the Bundesliga podcast that that Kev mentioned there to hear a bit more about that. But it's really interesting to hear how you know, the views on that. And I'm pretty sure that if the Bundesliga hadn't have made that decision, i.e. not to sanction Jadon Sancho, and it had happened in the Premier League, I would expect the Premier League to have done the opposite and sanctioned somebody to have done similar in this country. As the Bundesliga have taken the lead, it's probably likely that anybody else doing it may not be sanctioned if it happens again. It might have been a little running in the year, maybe, but I have difficulty with mixing politics and sport, but I do know that they are pretty much intertwined a lot of the time. And you know, this isn't just a political issue; it's a much bigger issue than that. And we've experienced, not to the same level, of course, that's happening in the US, but we've experienced a number of issues ourselves in the Premier League, particularly this season. When it comes to race, and also down the footballing pyramid in this country. So it's a subject that kind of hasn't, it's probably come to the forefront a lot more in probably the last 18 months or so, particularly in football. And yeah, I when I saw Jadon Sancho do that, it put a smile on my face, I think, more than anything else, because there are a lot of things happening in the world right now which, you know, we can't be comfortable with. And, you know, sometimes it needs people to express themselves in a way that they feel like they want to without pushing the boundaries. And I think sometimes, you know, this kind of thing is needed. And I think the right thing's been done. And it kind of shown, you know, pinning their colours on the flag, as it were, to actually, you know, support what they want to support in that way. And we should all be supporting, you know, that similar message across the board, to be quite honest, because there's a lot of things, like I mentioned, happening that are uncomfortable in the world right now. But what's been happening in the US, and, you know, this is kind of a long running thing. It's been happening before the unfortunate death of George Floyd. But it's kind of come to a head, hasn't it, really? And the US are probably paying for it at the moment with what's going on. So I really feel for people that are suffering because of it and struggling because of it. And yeah, the right things need to be done. And it's going to take a lot of time to recover from, unfortunately.
I couldn't agree more, Jay. I think that's absolutely right. And that was a good decision by the Bundesliga. And another thing that the Premier League can learn from, as you were saying, we're watching everything that they're doing as an example to, you know, what to do, what not to do. And that's just one more thing that we can learn from. I mean, you know, there have been significant demonstrations across Europe the past few days, big ones in London and in Belfast just today. And that's, you know, a reminder that this movement has been internationalized. And it's probably only likely to become more so, even though it is centered on an event in the U.S. But as the uncertainty in the U.S. continues, then it's probably going to keep gaining momentum. The statements of conscience that led the players in Germany to put the messages on their shirts, that seems a small thing to do, but it means a lot in the overall force of the moment, the force of the argument. And I think it would be such a powerful statement, you know, given that players can't celebrate gold in a traditional way, if their white colleagues were able to join them in taking a knee, for example, you know, to celebrate a goal, that would be, I think, something significant and symbolic. I mean, other sports in the U.S. baseball teams have all issued statements the last week or so, as has Major League Baseball, which of course is just got finished celebrating the legacy of Jackie Robinson, as it does every year in April. And there's been some very powerful personal statements by players like Dexter Fowler and Sean Doolittle, for example. And I hear what you're saying, Jay, about keeping politics out of sport, and it's all very well having that as an ideal. But sports is something that involves human beings and inspires a human reaction. And I think it's pretty much impossible to keep the two apart. Sport is a part of what life is. It's a reflection of us with all the, you know, the flaws and the problems that go along with life. And often, you know, we try to use sports as an escape from the real world, but really we shouldn't, because it is part of our real world. Anyway, not to get sort of too taken off in a tangent, but I mean we could probably spend an entire podcast just talking about this, but it's more than 50 years now since Tommy Smith and John Carlos, you know, raised their fists on the podium at the Olympics, and we're still sort of having discussions about how to resolve something that's been tearing America apart for much longer than that. And I think what has happened now is, and brought this to a head, is we're seeing this could be a tipping point in that conversation for no other reason than I think the sides are probably clearer now than they ever have been, and it's harder for ordinary people to turn away. And I think if sport, even in a small way, can help in facilitating that conversation, then that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, I certainly agree. And if you're in a position where you can help out, there's certainly places that you can donate to online to help people in the States as this all happens, as the protests happen mid-pandemic, mind, because that's the level of importance that this carries. Because while everybody's dealing with COVID-19 right now, a lot of Americans have been dealing with racism for far longer than the last couple of months. So We'll leave things there. Obviously not the uplifting end to the pod that we'd hope, but hopefully in time we'll be able to look back on this as just a dark chapter and not a dark future. Thank you guys so much for coming on today. It was a pleasure, despite having to talk about some very real things. If you'd like to tell folks where they could find you or anything you're working on, especially now that football is on the build back up, feel free.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me back on, Kev. It's been great chatting to you guys. Eaglesbeak.com, check out the website. We've had quite a few lockdown articles, lockdown diaries, we called them. They're basically fans that sharing their views, experiences, and just looking back at certain times in their Palace supporting life. And some of them haven't written before. They've just used lockdown as a period of kind of reflection and tranquility and written a few articles. And there's some really good ones on, I have to say. And if you're not a Palace fan, you're a football fan, some of them will probably relate to you because some of them are really well written, I have to say. So head on over. TheEaglesbeak.com is our website. We're across all the social media channels at The Eaglesbeak. And also just a quick plug of another podcast. Because my radio show, community radio show, hasn't been able to go on air for obvious reasons, we've done a few podcasts lately. We're on episode 5 and we've just done a few, had a couple of guests on, this kind of thing. And some of them are local guests, but I think they're quite fun to listen to. So if you want something a bit different, head on over to the Music and Sports Social, which is on Facebook, Instagram, and also Twitter. Twitter handle is @MarineSS. We're on iTunes. Check them out. Our links are all over our social media. So if you want something different to listen to, sporting podcasts, then head over and give us a listen. Many thanks.
That lockdown diaries idea sounds great. Yeah, I have a couple of Palace fans or friends here. I'll recommend them to that. Thanks again, Kevin, for having me on. It's been a great discussion, if a little sobering, I think, for so many reasons. But I'm Steve McGookin, and you can reach me on Twitter at Steve McGookin. If you wanted to check out any of my non-football writing, I am an associate editor at Northern Slant. You can get it at Northern Slant or northernslant.com here in Belfast. Thanks again, and fingers crossed for the next time we speak. We'll be talking about the triumphant return of the Premier League.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You can find me on Twitter at Kevroff, as I alluded to in the middle of a maybe inappropriate time to bring it up. We also have a new Bundesliga show, which you can find at Bundesliga Pod on Twitter. The show is actually called Bundesliga for Beginners, though, as me, Jamie, and Jim, who all frequent this podcast, fumble our way through learning about the Bundesliga while John McKenzie tells us how dumb we are and whips out incredible Bundesliga knowledge and facts. So definitely worth checking out there. Also, the championship show, I'm sure, is about to get going again with the EFL confirming that they will complete their season despite protests from some of their clubs. So that is going to be an interesting one for sure. But yeah, anyway, thank you guys so much for taking the time today. It was a pleasure as always, and we hope you keep listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.